and you will have a wonderful day.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. A major leak of classified documents has Washington wondering who put U.S. intelligence online and why. AP correspondent Jennifer King has more.
Says the online leaks of highly classified documents present a very serious risk to national security. It may have started in a Discord chat room. The Associated Press interviewed a young man who says he was a member of a social media chat group where another had been posting intelligence documents for several months, apparently to impress others in the group. The discussion turned to Ukraine, and the poster started typing in information with the poster's own thoughts. Then a few months ago began posting images of papers with the folds in them. The posts include details of U.S. and NATO assistance to Ukraine, and a top-secret analysis of intelligence agency ties between Russia and the United Arab Emirates.
We don't know who's responsible for this.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby was asked Monday if the U.S. government was effectively just waiting for more intelligence documents to show up.
We don't know. And is that a matter of concern to us? You're darn right it is.
Jennifer King, Washington.
U.S. President Joe Biden has spoken with the family of a Wall Street Journal reporter charged with espionage in Russia. We get details from AP correspondent Sagar Magani.
Spokeswoman Corinne Jean-Pierre says the president called Evan Gerskovich's parents from Air Force One while flying to Belfast.
Clearly that was something that was been top of mind for the president and thought it was incredibly important to do.
The call came a day after the Biden administration formally declared the reporter is wrongfully detained, which elevates his case for the government 2 weeks after Gerskovich was arrested.
We're making it real clear that it's totally illegal what's happening, and we declared it so, changes the dynamic.
He's the first U.S. correspondent detained for alleged spying since the Cold War.
AP Sagar Magani, this is VOA News. Germany's justice minister has launched plans to relax the country's strict restrictions on family names. For example, allowing couples to take double-barreled surnames and pass them on to their children. The minister said as he published the draft legislation Tuesday that the current system is about as up-to-date as a coal stove and as flexible as concrete. The legislation, which is supposed to take effect at the beginning of 2025, still requires the approval of the cabinet and parliament. It is one of several social reform projects that Chancellor Olaf Scholz, a socially liberal three-party governing coalition, agreed to embark on when it took office in December of 2021. Officials in northern Mexico say they have filed complaints against a local employee who ordered fishermen to rip the stingers off live rays to protect tourists during Easter week. The governor of northern state of Sonora calls it an act of caveman logic. The governor, Alfonso Durazo, says Tuesday he has reported the offense to the attorney general for environmental protection. People were shocked when videos of the mutilations began to circulate this week. The official who ordered the mass mutilation was fired last week. The Pacific Coast town had apparently long carried out the practice but will no longer do so. A new international migration campaign is being launched. Details from AP's Lisa Dwyer.
United States, Panama, and Colombia will launch a 60-day campaign aimed at halting illegal migration through the treacherous Darien Gap, where the flow of migrants has multiplied this year. Details on how the governments will try to curb the flow of migrants that reached nearly 90,000 in just the first 3 months of the year through the dense, lawless jungle have not been revealed. The governments made the ambitious joint announcement as the Biden administration nervously awaits the expected end of a pandemic-related rule May 11th that has suspended rights to seek asylum for many migrants. Without that instrument of dissuasion at the U.S. border, there is concern that migrant arrivals could again become unmanageable. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
New data details the nation's worsening tide of sexually transmitted infections, but health officials are hoping an old drug will help the fight. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Tuesday released data about some of the most common infectious diseases in the U.S. The numbers show how chlamydia, gonorrhea, and syphilis infections have been accelerating across the country. Meanwhile, the CDC is considering recommending an antibiotic to be used after sex to prevent those infections. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, April 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, President Biden arrives in Northern Ireland as Washington vows to find a source of leaked classified documents.
We will continue to investigate and try to determine the full scope of the activity. I will tell you that we take this very seriously, and we will continue to investigate and turn over every rock until we find the source of this and the extent of it.
Ukraine clings to Bakhmut as Russian forces intensify bombardment of the northern city.
Ukrainian officials said its forces repelled dozens of attacks as the Russian military kept up its effort to take control of Bakhmut.
And bloodshed continues in Sudan's troubled Darfur region. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. President Joe Biden landed near Belfast on Tuesday at the start of a three-day visit to Northern Ireland as he helps mark the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Peace Agreement. Biden was greeted after he touched down by British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. Biden arrives at a delicate political time in Northern Ireland as he helps mark the peace deal that largely ended 30 years of bloodshed there. Biden, known for decades for his pro-Irish views, will need to tread carefully as the largest pro-British Unionist Party continues to boycott the devolved power-sharing government that was a fundamental part of the 1998 Good Friday Agreement. Security concerns were highlighted on Tuesday by the discovery of four pipe bombs, small improvised explosive devices, in a city 110 kilometers from where Biden is to stay. Police in a statement linked the devices to Irish nationalist rioters who attacked police there on Monday. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin on Tuesday said the United States will investigate the recent purported leak of classified documents until the source of them was found. Austin, the first senior U.S. official to comment on the leak, said the Pentagon was aware that documents had been posted dated February 28th and March 1st, but was not sure if there were others that had been online before. Investigators are working to determine what persons or group might have the ability and motivation to release the intelligence reports. The leaks could be the most damaging release of U.S. government information since the 2013 publication of thousands of documents on WikiLeaks. For more, I spoke with VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Carla Barb.
Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin just spoke at the State Department, and he was asked about these leaked documents, and he said that the Pentagon and all of the U.S. intelligence community is taking this leak very seriously, and they will continue to work closely with their allies and partners and will not stop at anything to keep America secure. And they are still looking into what happened and how these documents leaked. As best as we can assess, the documents come from late February. There's a document titled February 27th or 28th, I believe, and then March 1st. So the documents at that time, we're still unclear how someone got their hands on these documents. And you can see that they appear to be pieces of paper, slides of a briefing on the war in Ukraine, slides that were taken and folded and put away and snuck out of a location that way. And again, the Pentagon, to its best assessment, is looking into how these were leaked, but they have not shown their cards on this at all. They're not going to tell us anything about the investigation that is underway. In addition to their own internal investigation, there's also been a criminal investigation opened by the Department of Justice.
These leaks is causing concerns, ripples among U.S. allies, and some of them are wondering that this might affect their national security and maybe strain their relationship, special relationship with the United States. How is the Pentagon handling this?
Well, the Pentagon has reached out to its allies, been doing that since the start of this scandal, and we can call it a scandal at this point because it is leaked top secret documents, some of which, I should add, U.S. officials say have been altered. There are a couple of instances where, in one instance, the number of Russian troops who have been killed in the war, it appears that number was decreased from an actual number that I have heard from intelligence officials, and that intelligence officials say to this day is much higher than that. That's one instance. Let's keep in mind that while this is a bit embarrassing for the United States and could have some repercussions on the war, it has not severed the U.S. and its allies and partners. In fact, Dmytro Kuleba, the foreign minister of Ukraine, is going to be at the Pentagon tomorrow, in fact. So we can see the problems with this, but it's not going to be enough to break apart an alliance.
That's VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Russian forces pounded front lines in eastern Ukraine with airstrikes and artillery attacks, while medical volunteers loaded wounded soldiers into a bus converted into an ambulance to bring them to a military hospital in the city of Dnipro. Tamar Lindstrom of Reuters produced this report.
Fighting raged in the frontline cities in eastern Ukraine Tuesday as Russian forces launched airstrikes and artillery attacks. Footage from a Ukrainian soldier's body cam video, released by the Border Service, showed fighters launching rocket-propelled grenades and shooting rifles in the destroyed yard of a house, purported to be the besieged city of Bakhmut. Ukrainian officials said its forces repelled dozens of attacks as the Russian military kept up its effort to take control of Bakhmut. The battle for the small, now largely ruined city on the edge of Russian-controlled territory in Donetsk has been the bloodiest of the war as Moscow tries to revive its campaign after recent setbacks. Both sides have suffered heavy casualties in the Bakhmut fighting. Near the front line, under the cover of darkness, medical volunteers loaded wounded soldiers into a bus converted into an ambulance to bring them to a hospital in the city of Dnipro. Maria, a 23-year-old volunteer paramedic, told Reuters that during a two-week rotation, she and her team evacuated hundreds of wounded soldiers.
This bus has been operational for around 2 months, so we evacuated nearly 600 people. This bus makes a whole difference as it saves people's lives.
Tens of thousands of soldiers have been killed and wounded on both sides of the conflict since Russia invaded Ukraine last year. The ambulance effort involves rotating teams of volunteers who spend several weeks on call, ready when injured soldiers need transport from the front line. Both trained medics and volunteers without a medical background serve.
It is very important for me because I have a connection to what we are doing. I work in the field, which I know, and where I am confident that I will do my best. Each of us has a mission, and this is my mission.
Donetsk is one of four provinces in eastern and southern Ukraine that Russia declared annexed last year and is seeking to fully occupy. Last week, President Volodymyr Zelensky said troops could be withdrawn from Bakhmut if they ran the risk of being encircled. Kyiv and the West say the smashed city has only symbolic importance.
That's Tamara Lindstrom of Reuters, and Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen has condemned Beijing's military drills in the Taiwan Strait, saying China did not demonstrate the, quote, responsible, unquote, behavior of a major Asian nation. China's air, land and sea drills that ended Monday were in retaliation for Tsai's meeting with the United States House Speaker on her tour of Taiwan's official and unofficial allies. Tsai says she represents Taiwan in the world and is expected to interact with its international friends. This as the island's defense ministry said on Tuesday that Chinese warplanes and Navy ships were still in the waters around Taiwan after the end of 3 days of war games. For more, I spoke with VOA Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo.
Chinese military drills have ended, but you are still seeing an increased military presence around Taiwan, and this has been confirmed by Chinese state television. They say there is actual combat training involving several warships in the waters around Taiwan. And this really gets to a point that even though China has increased its military exercises around periods of tension related to Taiwan, really, over the last 2 years, the trend you're seeing here is just more and more Chinese military activity in that region. They've really, really ramped it up overall. And so I think the concern here is that if the status quo now is a very heavy Chinese military presence in that area, when there are periods of tension, China will be actually increase that presence even more. And what does that look like? Where does it head? A lot of people in the region are concerned.
President Tsai Ing-wen slammed Beijing, calling it irresponsible for a major country to start this in the first place because of her stopover in the U.S. How will this resonate with Beijing?
You can expect Beijing to continue to act angrily, and they regard President Tsai, obviously, they call her sort of like independence leader. They call her government independence forces. That's an unfair assessment, since her government does not advocate for Taiwanese independence. However, even though you will see China respond very angrily in the coming months, there is an expectation that China's rhetoric and actions will sort of be moderated a little bit in the coming months, because Taiwan has a very important presidential election coming up in several months. In the past, when China has sort of gotten angry and sort of tried to put pressure on leaders like President Tsai, that has only helped them win more elections in Taiwan. China knows this, and it very likely is going to enter a period now where some of its actions and rhetoric are possibly a little bit more calibrated to take into account that upcoming election.
That's VOA Seoul Bureau Chief Bill Gallo speaking with me from the South Korean capital. French President Emmanuel Macron Tuesday outlined his vision for European economic and industrial sovereignty during a visit to the Netherlands following criticisms of our recent remarks about China and the United States. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
Speaking at a Dutch research organization in The Hague, President Macron said it was essential the European Union carve out an independent stance on five key areas, including trade, competitiveness, and European industry. Embedded across all, he said, should be European values and goals in areas like climate change.
We want to be open, we want allies, we want good friends, we want partners, but we always want to be in a situation to choose them, not to be 100% dependent on them.
Macron said Tuesday the COVID-19 pandemic and Russia's war on Ukraine helped drive the need for an independent European strategy, not reliant, for example, on either Chinese or U.S. technology.
Defending sovereignty doesn't mean to shy away from our allies. It means that we must be able to choose our partners and shape our own destiny, rather than being, I would say, a mere witness of the dramatic evolution of this world.
Macron made his remarks during a state visit to the Netherlands, the first by a French president in more than two decades. The comments follow a controversial interview with French and U.S. media when he reportedly warned against Europe being entangled in unrelated crises, apparently referring to Taiwan, and becoming too dependent on the United States for defense. China views Taiwan as a breakaway province and has vowed to reunite the territory with the mainland by force if necessary, and is opposed to any nation maintaining separate ties with Taipei. Poland's prime minister responded by calling Europe's alliance with the United States key to European security. U.S. Republican Senator Marco Rubio questioned whether Macron was really speaking for Europe. Macron's economic overture to China has also stirred controversy. He brought a large delegation of French business leaders on his visit there last week and sipped tea with his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping. Their meeting took place at a time when critics want China to toughen its stance toward Russia's aggression in Ukraine. This isn't the first time Macron has sketched out a broad EU vision that isn't necessarily shared by all member states. Protesters heckled him at the start of his speech, reminding him of ongoing demonstrations back in France against his pension reform plans. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
In other news, activists say bloodshed in Sudan's long-troubled Darfur region has left at least 14 people dead over the last 3 days. A local activist said clashes erupted Sunday in West Darfur province after Arab gunmen on motorcycles shot and killed a trader in the remote town of Forbaranga. The killing sparked a series of reprisal attacks between Arabic and African ethnic groups and looting, according to the spokesman for a local organization that helps run refugee camps in Darfur. The violence continued Tuesday, and death toll was likely to rise. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Around 1.5 million people in Turkey were made homeless by the February 6th earthquake, with many still lacking permanent shelter. In the city badly hit by the quake, local authorities are using every available space, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
The sleeping cars lined up at Iskenderun railway station allude to adventure. But this train is going nowhere. Hundreds of the city's residents, made homeless by February's earthquake, are now living in these cramped wagons. Among them is Sevil Uygur. She says, "We have no houses. They are gone. They were leveled to the ground. So we took shelter here with the children, and we live here. They bring us food. The people here are not left hungry. But sleeping here is very problematic and difficult." Uygur's granddaughter, Burin Uygur, is desperate to return to normality. "I want to go to the school," she says, "but at the moment the situation does not allow. Of course, I want to go to school." Sevil Uygur says a lack of money has made a bad situation worse. "If we could go to another place, she could go to school, but we could not, so we stayed here. Those who have money escaped and have gone to other cities, and their children go to school. But we cannot do it, so we sit here on the train." There are around 700 people living in the 27 wagons. 22 of them are sleeping cars with beds, which were quickly taken by the first arrivals. The remaining cars have no beds, and people sleep on upright chairs. Some people living here, like Safiye Kolagasi, have homes that are still standing but are too dangerous to live in. She says, "Our house is a little damaged. If the authorities say that we can live in our house, we would go today. We are waiting. But we will stay here until they tell us it is safe to live there." The rail cars are warmer and drier than a tent. But life here is cramped and crowded, with little privacy. With hundreds of thousands of homes destroyed or damaged by the earthquake, it's not clear when the homeless survivors will be able to move on. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A group of astronomers led by Peter Van Dokkum at Yale University accidentally made an interesting discovery. While he was scanning an image captured by the Hubble Space Telescope, Van Dokkum noticed an odd streak. Upon further investigation, he and his team discovered that the streak was actually a 200,000 light-year-long stream of newborn stars whose progenitor was, of all things, a rogue supermassive black hole zooming through intergalactic space. Usually, black holes eat stars, but do not create them. Van Dokkum says in a press release that the black hole has a mass of 20 million suns and is traveling so fast that it could travel from the Earth to the Moon in 14 minutes. Details of this discovery can be found in a study published by the astrophysical journal Letters. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including congressional sources say leaked top secret documents revealing that Ukraine could run out of air defense missiles within weeks are putting pressure on the Biden administration and NATO allies to increase support for the war effort. We'll examine this story and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Rain on me. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices, our voices. Right here on VOA on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and issues in the news on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington, wishing you a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On April 16, 2013, little more than 2 years into the Syrian civil war, at least 41 civilians were murdered. These victims were blindfolded, shot, and killed in cold blood as they were instructed, one by one, to run unknowingly into a death pit the regime dug. The victims were not fighters. They were civilians living in Tadamon, a suburb of Damascus, politically non-aligned and nominally under the protection of the regime of Bashar al-Assad. These horrific killings were documented by video evidence, leaving no doubt of the regime's hand in this atrocity. Nor is there any question that Amjad Yusuf, a member of Branch 227 of Syria's Military Intelligence Service, was responsible. The Assad regime has committed innumerable atrocities, some of which rise to the level of war crimes and crimes against humanity, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken. The massacre committed in Tadamon was one of them, he said. Video evidence of these murders, which were carried out coldly and methodically, was first publicly shared in 2022 after a long and comprehensive investigation by independent researchers, said Secretary Blinken. Today, we are taking action to promote accountability for this atrocity. On March 6, the U.S. Department of State designated Amjad Yusuf, a warrant officer in the Syrian Military Intelligence Directorate, pursuant to Section 7031C of the Department of State Foreign Operations and Related Programs Appropriations Act 2023, for his involvement in gross violations of human rights, namely extrajudicial killings. As a result of that killing, Yusuf, as well as his wife, Anan Wasuf, and their immediate family members are ineligible for entry into the United States. The United States remembers and honors the victims and survivors of the Tadamon massacre, and the victims of the many other mass killings the Assad regime has carried out. The footage of this massacre, coupled with the ongoing killings and abuse of countless Syrians, serves as a sobering reminder for why countries should not normalize relations with the Assad regime absent enduring progress towards a political resolution, said Secretary Blinken. We will continue to support Syrian-led and international efforts to ensure there are consequences for the ongoing human rights violations and abuses committed in Syria, he said. Accountability and justice for the crimes, violations, and abuses committed against Syrians are essential to a stable, just, and enduring peace in Syria and the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.